Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Now get the guns, the drugs, from my generation, I'll take the fall. The saints, and across the nation, and it's a sin. The guns, the fakes, the fraud, the messer with me. And we are live. It is Monday, March the 12th, 2018. Good evening, everybody, and welcome into the Raw Reaction here on the ChairShot Radio Network. I am your host. My name is Harry Broadhurst. Joining me, as per usual, the Dow since day one bedridden co-host, Tony Acero.
I am the tag team champion.
That's the main event, Tony. Well, it shouldn't have been, but it is. And the third man, Andrew Ballas.
Damn it, you made the reference before I could, bastard.
Tony got that straight cash on me. It's his fault. I blame him. Hey, Tony, how's your recovery coming along?
Oh, you know, I'm living. Drugs and weight loss, I mean, you can't really be mad.
Bronchitis was about the best weight loss program I ever had. I lost like 40 pounds dealing with that shit.
That was nice. 40 pounds, Jesus.
Yeah.
How long did
it kick my ass? It kicked my ass for the better part of a month and a half.
That's like a small child.
Andrew?
I just laughed. I said, basically, you should just say you gave birth at that point. 40 pounds, that's like a toddler.
Or a Braun Strowman lunch.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Plus the chocolate cake. I know Tony hated that. That's why I said it.
I figured it was something that.
I'm glad to hear you're on the road to recovery, Acero.
Yeah, it's a good time.
So, in the process of your bedriddenness, were you able to watch the Fastlane pay-per-view?
Yes.
Obviously, I know Andrew watched it. He did the article for the ChairShot website with the star ratings. So, shall we go ahead and get into the final reaction for the Fastlane pay-per-view before we get started with Monday Night Raw? Because some of it actually does tie over into Monday Night Raw itself.
Sure.
All right, let's start with our favorite match or moment. And to me, my favorite match or moment was actually the opening contest, Nakamura versus Rusev. Andrew?
Favorite match was actually Orton versus Rude. Like, it was a very slow, methodical, old school kind of like Jim Cornette wet dream, but it was still good. Like, the crowd lost it a little bit here or there because some spots were too slow. But it was safe. The spots looked crisp. Like, the ending was nice. It made sense for Rude to go up top because he does have some corner moves. So it wasn't just like a Ric Flair flop when you don't know why he's on the top rope or the middle rope. So I liked it. It was good. And it gives Orton the Grand Slam. So that's always nice.
Tony, how about you? Favorite match or moment?
It's kind of hard to say, only because Fastlane showed everything that's right and wrong with SmackDown. The right is that there's no bad wrestling. I mean, there's Carmella, but there's no bad wrestling. The wrong is that no one really cares, so you get Fastlane. I'm going to give it to Rusev and Shinsuke, mainly because it's one of the better matches that Shinsuke has put on, and it also just shows, you know, how well Rusev Day is getting over. Which is always fun. I like when things like that work out. That doesn't necessarily equate to Rusev the wrestler getting over, but that's just because they don't know how to translate, you know, that into the character. So I'll give it to Shinsuke and Rusev.
Yeah, but at the same time, if they can actually make the Rusev Day thing work for Alexander, you lost his last name coming up from NXT. If they can make the Rusev Day thing work for him, though, they could have a bona fide lower, upper mid-card, lower main event level talent for SmackDown, which is something SmackDown desperately needs.
Yeah, but they won't make it work. That's the point.
I know I got my Rusev Day shirt. I don't know about you guys.
It's just a chant to them like 10. Have you really seen Ty Dillinger on SmackDown in the last, like, 2 months? No.
No. Like the yes
He did get to win on the pre-show, though.
Hooray, the pre-show win. So is that like being the tallest midget?
I have more wins on the pre-show than Ty Dillinger.
That's what he said. Anywho, actually, it's more like being a dwarf around midgets.
Oh, okay, that's fair.
How about your least favorite match or moment? Tony, you went last for the first one. I'll let you go first with this one.
Shit, I don't remember. I remember disliking something, but I don't remember what. I don't know. I think I was on too many drugs.
Was it Shane McMahon getting involved?
No, I mean, that was just annoying. That was, like, eye-roll-inducing, but it wasn't like, oh, man, that pisses me off. I don't know, Fastlane was kind of just a pit stop. It wasn't very fast at all. Unnecessary, although I could tell that it was coming, ending to the tag team match, especially considering how well it was built off of one promo. Man, that was a one-promo match, but it was a good-ass promo.
I will say this much. When Andrew and I did our predictions last week here on The Reaction, I believe the name that I used for it was Speed Bump, which kind of seemed apropos, but the show itself turned out pretty well. Andrew, how about you? What was your least favorite match or moment?
I mean, it was the tag team match because, yeah, Tony's right. It was a predictable no contest ending because you're not going to give away the big New Day versus Usos match on Fastlane when you could hold it till Mania. And involving the Bludgeon Brothers was a necessary evil, but it also ruined what could have been like the show-stealing match because it was wonderful how they were using each other's moves and hitting them perfectly. So it was amusing. It was crisp. It looked natural. It made complete sense because they've faced each other like 9,000 times in the last year. And then the Bludgeon Brothers show up and do the squashy thing. And it's like, eh. So I think that was just disappointing. So it's not necessarily least favorite, but it was the most disappointing because the women's tag match, no one really had high hopes for that. So that kind of hit where people were expecting, but like the SmackDown tags were supposed to be a good match and we got that.
Well, at the same time though, I don't want to do a disservice to what the Usos and the New Day provided in the time up until the Bludgeon Brothers double disqualification run in for the no contest. So I actually am going to go with the women's tag match there just because it felt like when we do the SmackDown and 205 Live reviews, we've added a little segment to the end of that we call one word review, which where we describe the show in one word. That match, if I had to pick one word for it, would be superfluous.
Can you tell me again how that works, Harry? How does it work, the one word review thing?
You're being sarcastic, aren't you?
How do you think I laughed immediately? That was beautiful. You fell into it for half a second. I'm like, oh, that was great. That was great.
You do realize that I have the power to hang on you, right?
Yeah, but I also have the power to bring in people that listen, so.
Yeah, they're not listening for me. I have accepted that fact years ago. Anywho. All right, let's go ahead.
Yeah, let's avoid the Daniel Bryan, Shane McMahon power struggle, okay? You're both pretty. We all like you. Stop it.
I'm the tag team champion.
Calm down, Matt Morgan.
I'm the tag team champions. Anyway, scale of 1 to 10, Andrew, where do you fall?
7.5. I was very, very pleasantly surprised with the quality of matches.
Tony?
I'm going to go with like 6.5. Nothing was bad. But also, if last night didn't happen, would we be anywhere different? Yeah, you could argue the Bludgeon Brothers and Charlotte and Asuka, but realistically, no, we wouldn't be anywhere different. So,
I'm sure you guys heard the rat bastard. Andrew stole my score, 7.5. All right, Mr. Ballas, who's your MVP for the show?
Ooh, that's a good question, because there was a lot that went on in that show, and even though the storylines weren't necessarily progressed any differently than we were expecting, there was a lot of talking points that came from it, and it's hard to pin down one, but I guess the one that kind of stole the show, and if you even want to like piggyback talking smack onto it too, Shane McMahon kind of stole the show because his involvement in the main event added a expected layer to the whole Kevin-Sammy dynamic, but the fact that he got so overly involved just ruined and just made it different. So it's hard to just ignore the effect he had on that match. So I'm obviously, honestly going to give Shane McMahon the MVP.
I am so tempted to mute your microphone right now. Tony?
AJ Styles, for being AJ Styles, and for just, I mean, I've never seen a man wear powder blue the way he does. Good shit.
Those tights were straight out of the Chris Jericho closet. You shut your filthy whore mouth.
Nope. No one could pull it off the way AJ does. That man can wear every color.
This is going to be one of those episodes, I can tell already. I'm going to give my MVP to Shinsuke Nakamura for being the second year in a row that the Royal Rumble winner has had to have a match at the B show before WrestleMania and put in a very good performance. Last year it was Randy Orton who had a show-stealing match, and I remember talking with Tony about this match last year when we did the show, who had a show-stealing match with Luke Harper. And then this year, it was Shinsuke Nakamura with Rusev. So I'm going to give my MVP for Fastlane to Nakamura. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what Shinsuke and AJ provide at WrestleMania. We'll obviously talk more about that in 4 weeks, because we will be keeping up the reaction tradition for the go-home episode for WrestleMania. We will not be discussing Raw at all that week. It will be our full-on WrestleMania prediction that's special.
Oh, that's good to know.
With that,
Andrew,
said, gentlemen,
the week before WrestleMania, we don't cover Raw at all. We just talk about
muted. Shout out to Jimmy Christopher, who will be joining us for predictions going into WrestleMania. You're back, Tony.
Oh, I never left.
But he muted you.
Everybody heard what I needed to say.
All right, shall we go ahead and get into tonight's episode of Raw then?
We might as well before this goes further off the rails.
Not possible. We're already about as far off as they'll let us get, so we might as well go ahead and start doing the show now.
We haven't started gushing over Asuka and Sasha yet. We can go further.
Tony's going to gush about Sasha here in a few seconds because she's in our opening contest, which is scheduled for one fall. But we will go ahead and talk about our opening segment first. That is Kurt Angle coming down to the ring here. By the way, Detroit has a beautiful arena now, and I say this as a Red Wings fan. Bravo, guys. Well done. Anyway, Angle comes out to talk about the fact that it's going to be him and Ronda Rousey against Stephanie McMahon and Triple H at WrestleMania. But more to the point, he's here to discuss Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns and the fact that before Kurt came down to the ring, he was once again informed that Brock Lesnar is not there. Roman comes down, and, well, it kind of goes to hell in a handbasket from here. I'm too verbose to describe this. I will leave this to the wordplay genius that is Tony Acero.
You should do your one word review of the opening segment. Maybe that'll help you.
Y'all are going to be looking for a new host for this show soon.
So Reigns, he decides that he needs to be respected today amongst all days and the numerous days that he's been alive. And he realizes, seemingly in the middle of the ring, that Vince McMahon does not respect him. So he's going to go to the back, to the gorilla position where everything is real, get in the face of Vince McMahon, next to the commissioner of SmackDown, who should probably be taking care of his own show tonight, and ask for a sidebar, which he basically gets. They go to a separate room. Vince McMahon, you know, promises whatever he promises. We get a little mini interview with him saying that Brock will show up next week for sure. But because Reigns did what he did tonight and Vince ain't no bitch, Reigns is suspended for the evening. That's essentially what happened tonight. Meanwhile, Kurt's in the middle of the ring still wondering where his little cowboy hat is.
I think it's in the actual WWE Hall of Fame, like the physical building up in Stamford. That or Austin has it as a memento. Anyway, what did you think of kind of the work shoot opening to tonight's episode of Raw, Andrew?
I think Vince had on a really sharp tie. Like, it had purple elements to it, a little bit of blue. Like, it was really sharp. It contrasted well with his suit. It was good. What the hell is all the background noise?
I think it's Tony. Because I have my headphones in.
A wireless headset that isn't agreeing, so I'm just going to go on speaker.
That works. That's what I do. So, aside from Vince's tie, which that was the biggest thing that came from that promo, I don't care. Like, I didn't understand the redirect of getting sick at Brock's work ethic and then turning it onto now McMahon doesn't respect people because Brock is his boy now. Like, okay, fine. Like, that was like a lazy promo that took absolutely no effort. There was no rumblings behind it. There's no IWC chatter that could, you know, validate it. It was just stupid. And then I don't remember if the suspension was indefinite or just for the evening, but I mean, the only saving grace from that whole clusterfuck was the fact that at least Brock wasn't there. That is a nice element to keep dragging out the Reigns getting pissed off kind of situation and Brock thinking he's better than everybody. Because if you have him no-show, quote-unquote, it's nice. It adds to the heat. It adds to the fact that maybe he does think he's better than everybody. So it could help to keep fans on Roman's side as opposed to Lesnar.
I forget who I saw come up with this scenario. I think it might have been DeMarco, actually. And God knows I hate giving that guy credit for anything. But he said something along the lines of Lesnar should no-show every episode of Raw between now and WrestleMania. On the go-home episode of Raw, Angle says that the week before the go-home, Angle says that either Lesnar shows up at the go-home episode of Raw or he's stripped of the title and out of the WWE and he'll find an opponent for Roman for the vacant title at Mania. And then on the go-home episode of Monday Night Raw, Roman comes out. They pretend like they play it off like Brock isn't there. Brock comes in through the crowd, beats Roman's ass, leaves him laying, and then uses something along the lines of "See you at WrestleMania, bitch."
Yeah, I think that was the Mocha.
I actually think that would work very well with what Andrew just said there because of Brock's kind of holier than thou persona when it comes to the world of professional wrestling anymore. Tony, do you have any interest in this match right now?
I mean, not particularly, but I'm not, you know, I've said it before, WrestleMania is a show where there's at least something for everyone, and it's one of those times where I enjoy the spectacle as a whole more so than the moving parts within. We're getting our match, Shinsuke versus AJ, and I'm excited about it. With regards to Brock versus Reigns, I knew this was going to happen. They started off hot. They had the crowd behind Reigns, and then he had to come out and be too cool.
And it's a very, very thin line that they're messing with, and I don't think that they're good enough to do it. Tonight he got suspended and everybody cheered. That's not what you're trying to do. And you did that wrong because you thought that Reigns would be cool to go hit up Vince McMahon. When Vince is not on TV, he's a face. Everyone thinks he's amazing. So you getting all up in Vince's face doesn't get people behind you. Had Vince been an on-air character for the past 5 weeks, it would have worked. But Vince McMahon is old CEO, just runs the show, just trying to do his job, Vince McMahon, right now. He's not the asshole, Vince. So you can't get behind Reigns because, A, there's no power trip. There's no Austin versus McMahon dynamic. And, B, we don't like when people mess with Vince McMahon unless he's been on TV and he's been an asshole. You have him get headbutted by Kevin Owens. All right, you got to heal. You have Reigns go muscle up a dude who's wearing a headset trying to do his job. It comes off as like, you know, you were doing just fine, Reigns, and now you had to go and do this. Like, and then again, like Andrew kind of touched on and I mentioned in the summary, he just flipped his switch in the middle of the ring. That's just bad writing. Like, you know, Brock, you could disrespect me, but hold on. There's this old dude that's been disrespecting me. Let me call him out. Since when? Since when does this even matter? Like, so it's just, again, it when you have a character as polarizing as Reigns, bad writing can really, really turn things very, very easily. Literally, one line can make or break a character like Reigns. And today was a kind of a downfall, whereas last week or the week before, they did something strong. This week, they kind of messed it up a little bit.
So you're never not going to make the joke here. The one other thing that I wanted to ask you guys about real quick from this segment here was Vince's use of the Rock's old line. Did you guys think that that worked well in the context of Vince's promo? Hold on, can you guys hear me?
Yeah, I was just waiting for Andrew.
Oh, well, in that case, it was a throwaway line, like, who cares? Bringing up The Rock, know your role thing. Wow, he's related to The Rock. You know that. We got that over like 4 years ago when The Rock came out and tried to get him over after Rumble win. No one cares. The Rock is related to Nia Jax, too. Let's throw a line at her. Like, who gives? That was dumb. It was a sad attempt at a cheap pop.
I, too, am related to The Rock.
Oh, nice.
There's some moments.
Did you do it for The Rock, though?
I've done it for The Rock.
Oh, ooh, baby.
Our opening contest scheduled for one fall.
No, not again.
I'm going to run that shit into the ground. Thank you, Tony. And I think Tony only did that because it's his bae in this match. Okay, yeah, I can't use that word. I'm too Caucasian for that. Anywho, it's Sasha Banks and Sonya Deville. Sasha ends up picking up the win at 7 minutes and 33 seconds, tapping out Deville with the bank statement. Mandy Rose goes to get involved. Bayley pulls her off of the apron before she can do so. However, post-match, Bayley walks away and Sonya and Mandy lay out Sasha Banks. Tony, do you think this is going towards that one-on-one match at WrestleMania, or do you think we're going to see some kind of maybe a tag match at WrestleMania between these four women, and then we see the official Bayley turn happen at Mania itself?
Man, it better not be. Nobody wants to see Absolution at Mania. Sasha versus Bayley is where it's at. And, of course, they go for a storyline that isn't based in just better quality wrestler and has to be laced with some dramatic female, you know, anti-woman thing. I'm not mad about it. It's just I feel like they could have gone any route and they chose the easiest one. But no, we're going to get Sasha versus Bayley and it's going to be a good match and we'll go from there.
Well, if there's one thing Kevin Dunn's production of the WWE has taught us, it's that bitches be crazy. Andrew?
Yeah, I mean, basically the same thing that Tony said. I don't want to see Absolution in anything aside from that new women's rumble that they announced that we'll get to later. But regardless of the actual main card, yeah, Bayley Sasha is where it should be. And the only thing I noticed that I thought was kind of ironic in a funny kind of way was Bayley looked like she could use a hug today. Like, it was funny. It made me giggle.
I'd hug Bailey. I'm just saying.
I'd hug her with
WWE
a bag over her head.
Our newest member of the WWE Hall of Fame is Kid Rock. I saw a lot of people bitching about this online today. It's the celebrity wing of the Hall of Fame, people. Get the fuck over it.
I am so upset.
Are you sure it was Kid Rock? Because it looked like a crackhead to me.
I'm not saying
Kid
he
Rock.
Hasn't seen better days.
Oh, sure? We're sure?
Tony, did you say you were upset?
Yes. So angry.
Aw, Puddin'.
And everything is right in the world.
We move on.
You were just...
Hey, I gotta take the opportunities where I get them. Miz TV follows. Finn Balor and Seth Rollins are the guests here. Miz tries to play Seth against Finn first and then Finn against Seth. Seth and Finn both see through his shit. However, they do end up getting snippy with each other during the course of the end of their promo. At the end of the segment, however, they both turn their attention toward Miz. But before they leave the ring, Seth puts Balor on the canvas with a clothesline after he's distracted as Miz rolls out of the ring. We then announce that there will be a singles match between the two a little bit later on there. Andrew, your thoughts on Miz TV?
It's going to hurt me to say it because we all know that, you know, Miz is usually one of the bright spots of the show and he's damn good on the mic. But not only did this feel kind of like a retread of last year's WrestleMania promos when he was just speaking truth at Cena and they tried to deny it and then end up proving it correct, like 5 minutes later or in the next breath, talking out of both sides of your mouth. However you want to, you know, phrase the cute little way of encapsulating the situation, that's exactly what we had here. They tried to see through his crap. They're like, oh, no, we know what you're trying to do. And then they played into it anyway. Seth did exactly what Miz said, were hitting him when he wasn't paying attention, and then it turned into a match, which was a damn good match. But still, Miz was proven right the entire time. You wasted 10, 15 minutes on babble that really just contradicted itself just to get us to a decent match to kick off this 4 or 5 week feud, whatever it is.
Tony, your thoughts?
Yeah, it's kind of what bothered me about the whole show is that you didn't do anything new. And this is something that I fear every time they have a card that is set in stone so early. They get lazy. Either they get lazy or they get super crazy. Lazy or crazy, really. And this was just one of the lazy things where I love The Miz. I love everything that he does. I even enjoyed tonight. And it was funny watching him fail and then succeed and then succeed and then fail and then succeed again, ultimately being the smart guy in the ring. But what that does is it makes your competitors look like idiots. You don't want that. Now when they're facing The Miz is the idiot. So kind of like, okay. I mean, the only good thing that we got out of this was a good match. Other than that, no one really came out looking like gold. You're suffering because instead of your usual bad fare where you make Miz look horrible as a champion, you made Miz look horrible as a champion, but you also made your two contenders look kind of dumb. So, I'm not mad at the match that we got out of it, but I also feel like it was a retreat, not just of last year, but of basically every Miz feud.
Really? Really? Really?
Really?
Yes, really.
Really? The Bar, Cesaro and Sheamus are about to have a match with the Miztourage, Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel, when they get jumped from behind by the Miztourage, dumping Cesaro out to the floor and attempting to beat Daniel and Sheamus. It turns into a brawl with every tag team involved there. Gigantic clusterfuck breaks out, and we end up having Kurt Angle schedule a match in a segment a little bit later on with Cesaro and Sheamus of a tag team battle royal that will be your main event. Oh boy, will that be your main event.
Man.
You know, I don't even want to close the show with that garbage.
We're not. We're going to talk about all this.
Can we just can we just talk about the Battle Royal right now?
Yes, Harry.
Sure.
Good. What in the goddamn fuck was that?
I am the tag team champion.
Braun wanted competition. Come on.
Look, I feel bad because every single team that went out there gave me an undeniable response of, like, that's unfortunate that there's not one team where I was just like, yeah, I want to see them at WrestleMania. And I think that's creative kind of fell into the same trap where they're like, well, I mean, none of these guys really have the star power, so fuck it, let's have Braun destroy all of them. Another unfortunate thing that I came across is that typically on any other podcast or any other review show, a lot of people would have and probably will still say they should never allow this to happen because it puts down the tag team division. In fact, if you have Jimmy C on the show, he would very much be standing by it. Like, you know, there are no tag teams. They don't exist. Here's a sandwich. Blah, 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 blah. I'm going to eat. But realistically, we don't care, so everyone enjoys tonight. But still, you're left scratching your head, like, what the hell's going on? And aside from that, you have Michael Cole being a fucking idiot. Well, what happens now? These are totally against the rules. What could we possibly do next? Shut up. Jesus.
Can I give an idea for what I would like Braun Strowman to do?
Shoot.
No.
Too bad, Tony. I'm giving it anyway. I want him to announce Samoa Joe as his tag team partner.
Nah.
No, I want him to announce Curt Hawkins as his tag team partner. Basically, just bring a dead body to the ring and just make a tag team out of him.
I want Braun to be in the corner, tag himself in, and then win.
Okay, now real talk for a second. Who was worse on commentary, Cole or Coach, with his trying to, like, backtrack, like, wait, I don't think it was ever explicitly said that they had to be a tag team to be in this. And then everybody's just like, no, dumbass, it's a tag team battle royal. What the fuck?
Okay, that wasn't Coach's only noticeable fuck-up during this match, too. Did you hear him call Curtis Axel Rhino?
Yeah,
no, I heard him call Bo Dallas.
Like from behind.
I heard him call Bo Dallas Rhino, not Curtis Axel.
Yeah,
I think
Bo
it
Dallas
was Axel
Rhino
he was referring to because Axel has the long hair.
Axel doesn't
no,
have
doesn't.
Long hair.
Bo Dallas does. Okay, Michael Cole Jr., relax. We have to mute you? Tony, mute him.
Harry, you're mute.
He can't. I can't. Hold on.
Mute yourself. You're in timeout.
But yeah, that was it was one thing to accidentally call someone some other wrestler. It was another thing to say, well, he looks like him from behind. I mean, you look at Bo Dallas and you look at Rhino.
I mean, it kind of works. Like, Coach hasn't seen Rhino in, like, what, 10 years? Rhino's
right.
Thickened up a bit more, so when he remembered Rhino was more of a slender kind of muscular build.
Like a baby rhino.
It's exactly,
so
a baby rhino.
So what you're saying is Bo Dallas is Rhino Jr.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I don't even know how to proceed with that, so I'm just not going to.
That's fair.
All right, Tony, I'm going to let you have the floor for this one because I know you had some relatively strong opinions about it. John Cena makes his way down to the ring after failing at Fastlane. Go ahead and take it from here.
John Cena sucks.
Papa
Joe! So the match that I predicted happening months ago, the match that Greg DeMarco refused to accept as actual reality, the match that people thought I was such a fool to believe John Cena, or to believe that it was actually happened. John Cena was swerving me, and he fooled everyone in the crowd, and blah, 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 is going to happen. John Cena versus The Undertaker is going to happen. And tonight was the one step that they took to go towards that direction. And it was an interesting one. First, it was a very long-winded promo that did not make much sense.
Cena did what he does. He says he found himself a path, and he's going to join the crowd, and he's going to be a fan. And then he goes into the crowd, and then he chants with them, and he puts down Roman in one quick move, comes back, and then challenges The Undertaker because, you know, why the fuck not? It's basically his reasoning. And then it gets more serious, and it goes from why the fuck not to you are lazy. You're not old. You're not broken down. You just are a little bitch. You're hiding behind your loss. You're an ostrich with a head in the sand. You haven't shown up for a year, even though he was here 2 months ago. And the only person not making this match possible is you. So he basically said, hey, Undertaker, whatever Reigns said this earlier tonight about Brock, I'm saying that about you. Are you down?
So can we dub this Raw the night of contradictory promos?
Yes, we can. I'm sure that wouldn't be the only Raw, but yeah, we can call. Yeah, we'll call this volume 322.
Okay, long-winded contradictory promos. Thank you.
That's more than one word, Andrew.
It doesn't matter. It's a title. Titles are more than one word. Or are you doing your review again, Harry?
I'm glad that you finally caught on. All right, moving on. Go ahead and continue your thought, Andrew.
I mean, what Tony said is basically right. Like, there's not a lot of meat left on that bone because it's just Cena calling him out after pandering to the crowd about saying he'll just be a fan and he'll sit in the crowd next to people and blah, 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 takes a sip of beer to try to act like he's one with the crowd and then gets serious out of nowhere because he's Cena and I guess he feels like it can just work if he turns on a dime. I don't know. I mean, I'm still not 100% sold on the Cena-Taker match happening because I'm going to believe it when I see it because this just sounded sort of desperate. But I can see Taker. So that's where I'm going to base that off of. It'll be Taker versus a Shadow or something like that, but at least I'll see Taker.
I have to say, I actually think that there might have been some entertainment value into John Cena just sitting in the crowd looking like a special person sitting there watching as a fan. Part of me would find that somewhat hilarious.
If John Cena were in the crowd looking like a special person, I would make a wish for him.
Should we bring Eugene back just for this occasion?
Yes.
Oh, that needs to happen. I miss Nick Dinsmore. Let's do it. Why not? Why the fuck not? They've been huge on cameos these last couple of months. Why not?
Little insensitive with the climate of, you know, society nowadays. Just a little bit.
Be a star, Harry. Jesus. Fucking retard.
Yeah, because I'm the only one that's ever had that problem on this show. Elias goes to sing after we see the aforementioned promo between Cesaro, Sheamus, and Kurt Angle backstage. Elias goes to sing. Shing? Fuck it.
Shing. Sing a song.
He's singing in the rain, actually. But then stops his performance and tells the crowd that this is all their fault and leaves. Well, he says all your fault, so he might not have been referring to the crowd, but one assumes that he was. Do you think Elias will have anything of note for WrestleMania, or is he getting thrown into the Andre, Andrew?
I mean, it all depends on which body Braun wants to bring to the ring for his tag team match. But my guess would probably be the Andre Battle Royal. But you never know. You never know.
Tony?
Sure, yeah. I don't care that Eli lost his smile tonight. I foresee him showing up in the battle, assuming that they're going to have a male battle royal because, you know, they have a female one now. We're just breaking history, man. We're just making history with these women.
If we want to keep making history, I just had an idea because Elias reminded me of the Symphony Destruction match from last week and the whole Braun thing with the stand-up bass. What if Braun declares the stand-up bass as his tag team partner for the match and he tags it in and then hits somebody with it. It's a competitor. It's not a foreign object anymore. So then he can pin and get the win, right?
Yeah. Could be a base buster. Do you think that would be an official base turn for Braun?
Isn't he still a face? I thought he's been a face.
I said base.
God damn it, Tony. An official base turn.
I hear it now.
Speaking of Braun, he gets one of those promos where they put the words on the screen, because of course they do that these days. Social media, anyway. And talks about promising to carve his own path to WrestleMania. Yeah, well, you saw it earlier.
Well, he did.
We talked about it earlier. You saw it later on in the show. Whatever.
The word of the day is piano.
Piano!
I feel like this is turning into an episode of Pee-wee's Playhouse and you just said the secret word.
I mean, they made the reference on Raw, so that's good.
Andrew, you talked about it earlier. I'll let you...
If you say words
go ahead,
enough,
Tony.
They show up on... If you say words hard enough, they show up on the TV screen.
Does that work in real life? Is that like Bloody Mary?
Yes.
To be fair, Sesame Street taught us that years ago.
True.
You mentioned the match earlier, Andrew. I'll let you get first crack at it here. Finn Balor, Seth Rollins.
I mean, it's what you kind of expected from a Seth Rollins-Finn Balor match. It was a solid match, went back and forth for a good bit of time. They both got their stuff in. And then Finn ended up countering Seth's little superplex into the Falcon Arrow with just a simple roll-up by hooking the ankles, which, you know, that was somewhat unique because you don't see that setup of the roll-up because he had the ankles and just kind of had Seth's back flat. So it just looked uncomfortable as hell. That was awkward. But it at least starts Finn off with some momentum, because I don't really think he had much going into things because he was piggybacking off of Rollins before. I think he was eliminated before Rollins in the Elimination Chamber. Like, everything he's been doing hasn't seemed exemplary at all, and it's all been second to Seth. So it's nice that he finally got one over on him and is kind of building a little bit of momentum.
Tony, we've talked many times before about these kind of matches not really helping anybody on the road to a pay-per-view, especially in a triple threat where it's two competitors going one-on-one here. Do you agree with Andrew's assessment that Balor needed this win more than Rollins did?
I mean, Balor needed something. The best thing he's got going for him are his abs. There's really not much else. And it's not his fault.
They're fantastic, though.
Yeah, they're very
good.
Dude
is fucking shredded.
Yeah, he's got personality. He's got the backing of, you know, a demon persona that they've basically stripped away. So tonight did not hurt him. And getting one up on Seth in the intelligence department helps go a long way. But again, like I said earlier, having 4 weeks, you know, left to create a story, it makes me fear what they're really going to create, if anything. Or next week we're going to see Miz versus Rollins or Miz versus Finn, and then the following week, you know, the next match. Like, because that's basically what they end up doing.
We'll talk about the Fabulous Moolah Battle Royal after we discuss the next two matches involving the women. I feel that the Battle Royal itself merits going on last, and also because the show hasn't been screwed up enough, I have some very matter-of-fact statements that I want to make about this year that I'm going to make my point crystal clear. That being said, we go ahead and we move on. We talk about Asuka challenging Charlotte at Fastlane here, and we question where that leaves us for the Raw Women's Raw. The Raw.
Are you having issues with English today, Harry?
I might be Michael Cole Jr. today after all. I might have to mute myself again. Anyway, we talk about what's going on with the Raw Women's Championship. Ebba dip it, but that's all, folks. All right, anyway.
before Asuka can say anything about why she chose Charlotte, Alexa and Nikki. Fuck it. Take it, Tony.
Harry sounds worse than Asuka's promo. No, Alexa comes out and does the very, very predictable promo of, you know, you're lucky you chose Charlotte because I would have beat that ass. Asuka shuts her up and says, I wanted to face the best. You're obviously not the best. To beat the woman, I got to beat the woman, which I thought was a really nice touch. Also really cool to hear. Totally, you know, on board with the choice as well as the match. And then we get the first we get the attempt to bring Nia out, which does not happen. And then we get a match with Mickey versus Asuka, which I feel did really well in terms of story. But for whatever reason, Mickey just – sometimes she hits a match where she, like, stalls too much and comes off real hokey. It's like she loses her footing and never catches it again. And I take you back to the match against Gail Kim years ago where the very next day I went up to them at a Raw signing and asked what happened, and they got really upset with me. For whatever reason, I wasn't even rude about it. I wasn't even a rude fan. I was like, hey, guys, so what happened last night? Oh,
Tony,
I don't want to talk
marking
about
on everybody.
Well, damn. Okay. Yeah. Who knew that years later I'd see both of you naked? No, anyways. The match was whatever. Like I said, I think it had a good story, but it was never in question who was going to win. Now, before I go on about what I want to talk about with what happened next, I want to ask your guys' opinion. Basically, we get a camera shot in the back with Mickey and Alexa talking.
Wait, Tony, there's a squash match in between that.
No, that doesn't matter. So Alexa and... I mean, it really doesn't matter. Nia squashes somebody. No. I didn't even put the match in the report. I just said she squashes somebody. So she's out in the ring, if that matters. Alexa and Mickey are in the backstage area, locker room, talking. There's a camera that's not moving, so it's stationary. They're doing the typical girl gossip, talking about Nia, putting her down, calling her fat and Shrek. And it goes on for a little longer than I felt comfortable with. Nia's watching it all, and then Charlie comes up and informs both Alexa and Mickey that the microphone is on and the hard cam's on and everyone knows what's going on. The girls hightail it. Nia runs from the ring to the back and then goes crazy and rips off a few covers of luggage and screams like mad, and then that's the end of the segment. So before I talk about what I felt was good and bad, how about you guys do it?
Do you want to go first here, Andrew, or you want me to?
You can go first.
It came off very Mean Girls to me. Like, if you don't wear purple on Wednesdays, you can't sit with us.
Well, it's pink on Wednesdays, but I get what you're saying.
I've never
actually
seen
it. Y'all both know that movie way too closely.
I've never actually seen the movie, but anyway, my ex used to reference it all the time. Anyway, I would never be invited to sit with you anyway, Tony, and I've accepted that as my lot in life. Anywho, back to the segment itself. Yeah, it did seem to kind of run a little long for comfortness, and it reminded me of those old, like, GTV segments and stuff, where it was one of those ones where they put it into the show the way that they did it because they had to, not because they had any other idea of how they wanted to get where they were going with it. The biggest takeaway I had from it was when Nia was walking up the ramp and she stopped and she cleared her thoughts and then she started storming back there. She actually got a pretty strong face reaction when she did that. Andrew?
I mean, yeah, that promo did go on too long. But as soon as I saw that kick in, like, immediately, this is going to date me and do nice old references again like last time, but I immediately thought candid camera. I'm like, oh my God, this is so stupid, but I'm actually amused. And Nia's reaction to the whole thing, it helped to ingratiate her, I think, more, because crying last week I don't think did that much, because that was kind of Big Show shtick, being big and sensitive and crying a lot. But now everybody got to just sit through the awkward moment of watching her friends bash her. And you know, most people can relate to that. So it's very easy to be empathetic towards a character who you see just having everything like kind of crumble in front of her. And yeah, the pan they did to her face as she was walking up the ramp and where she cleared her thoughts and then kind of went back into her old entrance where it would just kind of zoom in on her face as she kind of looked up and then panned out. Like, that was nice to see the monster was kind of back and ready to kill Alexa and Mickey. So that was good. My major issue with both of these two things, though, the Asuka-Mickey match and then this candid camera situation, was the crowd. Like, the match between Mickey and Asuka was actually pretty solid. Like, there wasn't that many botches. It was a little stilted at times, sure, but you had Rusev Day chant sprout up for absolutely no reason. Like, I think Asuka kicked Mickey and was, like, kicking her over and over, where Mickey used her amazing flexibility to kind of just go back and bounce up and bounce, and like one of those punching bag balloon toys from, you know, childhood. And then they start chanting like CM Punk. And I'm like, what the hell are wrong with you fucking moron? Like, shut up, enjoy the match. It's a decent match, especially for a TV match. It was pretty damn good. And stop trying to get yourself over or just amuse yourself when you're supposed to watch the fucking match. Jesus Christ.
I will say real quick before Tony gives his thoughts on the Alexa, Nia, and Mickey segment there, I will say that I actually do agree with Tony, though, that in my opinion the match itself did come off kind of rough as compared to what we've seen from Mickey previously in other showings leading up to the Elimination Chamber. All right, Tony, the floor is yours.
Anytime a crowd decides to get themselves over instead of the match that's being presented to them, I will always be upset. I don't care if the match sucks. If the match is horrible, then boo. Then give them the attention that they so crave as wrestlers. Tell them it's bad. Don't go off on your own to try to get yourself over. I noticed that too, and it was kind of annoying. With regards to the segment, there's a couple of things that bothered me, only because they were going in a particular direction, and then they reverted right back to whatever it is that, you know, the writers think is the right thing to do. What I mean by that, calling Nia Shrek and putting her down and all that, that's fine because, you know, Nia's going to win. She's going to get the comeuppance. She's going to be the one that beats the bully. And people can relate to this, man or woman. And the little kids that are watching can definitely relate. Like, damn, that's mean. Alexa Bliss is mean. You know, we know that going in. Nia Jax turning her face. The moment that she walked up the ramp, stopped, wiped her tears, and rushed the stage was the pivotal moment that could have made something amazing. And then she went backstage and threw a fit. That's not what she needed to do. What she needed to do was be composed, like she just composed herself. She wiped her tears. She walked backstage with anger, but with a purpose. And she was unable to fulfill her purpose and just flipped out and started ripping shit, tearing stuff up. And it just didn't, to me, it didn't scream comeuppance. It didn't scream, I got this. It screamed uncontrollable female. It screamed bitches be crazy. And that's really unfortunate because I feel like that's the direction they're going to go. In fact, I would have let it linger for an entire week. I would have let Nia break down in the ring a little bit, do the exact same thing she did, but not let Alexa and Mickey know that Nia knew. You know, just something like that. If they're going to go that route of the whole, oh, she didn't know the camera was there, even though WWE has been doing this for a very long time, you know, then we can suspend belief for a week too. And I'm not saying that's the right thing to go. I'm just saying that might have been more interesting than putting it all on one show and then having Nia just kind of explode with emotion, but in like a rage that to me didn't seem fitting of the response that she originally gave. This is emotionally taxing. This is sad. This is a person that I just told I loved her putting me down and calling me Shrek and making me feel like nothing and putting me to a place where I am less than nothing. I'm emotionally damaged right now, and this fucked me over big time. But you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to wipe my tears. I'm going to walk up this ramp, and I'm going to beat her ass. Now, if she's not there, okay, all right, walk away, whatever. But her little rage of, you know, against the luggage, to me, just, and of course, this is a more personal opinion than anything else, but
I feel like it just kind of weakened the stance that you're trying to portray, or that you could have possibly portrayed as the ultimate face, because that's what this was. This was a face turn, not a base turn. And I think that diminished it just a little bit.
A, Rage Against the Luggage sounds like a cover band I would totally listen to. B, I'm going to 100% agree with you, Tony, because while you were mentioning that, I was sitting here thinking about what you were saying there, and I 100% agree that they would have been better off if, when Nia got to the back there and Alexa and Mickey had already split, if she had just calmly told Charlie in an interview, Nia, do you have anything to say about what we just heard? Yeah, I'm going to beat their ass next time I see them.
Oh,
and walked away.
And that would have been beautiful. Or she could have just said, don't get.
Show's gone off the fucking rails tonight. Speaking of off the fucking rails, let's go ahead and wrap this up with conversations about the now female alternative to the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, the Fabulous Moolah Memorial Battle Royal. I'm going to let you guys go first here, because I have some very specific things that I need to get off my chest about this. And Tony, to give you a preview of what's about to happen here, the last time I said that it was about Susan G. Komen.
Oh, okay. Boobs. Well, we're having a new battle royal at WrestleMania, and it's centered around the women, and it's supposed to be historical and groundbreaking and, you know, all those other things that they want us to believe that the women are doing this past year and a half. I'm all for, you know, the stance and the first time ever matches and the importance of a female, but to add another match that's basically filler is just kind of like, eh, you know? It's so in fact, that I'm not angry at all. I'm just like, well, okay, I guess that's happening. If that's what we're going to do, then sure, why not? Now, I'm not fully signed on the whole Fabulous Moolah is a good person or not trained. I don't really care. But again, it just kind of comes at a time where it's like the WWE doesn't know how to be subtle about anything, nor do they know how to kind of, you know, milk things in the proper fashion. And this whole women's movement, you know, both in Hollywood and America and the country and the WWE, I'm not saying it's going too fast, because I'm not going to be that one dude that somehow gets quoted on a podcast that four people listen to and get lambasted for it. But at the same time, from a storytelling standpoint and from a person who really, really feels like you could embellish the idea of women empowerment, I feel like this is just another in a long line of moments that will not last longer than they want them to. The end.
Andrew?
Yeah. I mean, this is obviously a PR stunt, just like everything else, which that's not to discredit anything that the women are doing or have been working toward. But when you decide to coin a phrase like women's evolution or revolution, and then you start just randomly throwing them into the main event of the Rumble and then doing all these quote-unquote historical things, it doesn't seem like a natural progression. It seems like you're just trying to jump on the current trend in society and milk a little bit of extra, you know, a little bit of extra Twitter topics to trend, or maybe get a little bit of movement in NBC or something like that, making it seem like, oh, well, you know, WWE is really progressive and they're doing all these things for women now. Yeah, that's not what it is. And like I said, I'm not trying to minimize or marginalize anything that they do, because you have some of the best athletes in WWE are the women. You got Charlotte, you got Sasha, you got Asuka. They are fantastic wrestlers, be it male or female. But this is just, it's too much, too quick. And throwing Moolah in there is the icing on a cake that doesn't really need it, because it's already way too sweet and way too overdone. Because everybody knows Moolah had a 27-year reign. Everybody knows Moolah had her own special belt that, hell, it was even in one of, like, the Holy Foley freaking preview they did after SmackDown, or Talking Smack, or maybe that was the actual episode. I don't know. I just left it on too long because I was writing the article and then forgot to shut off the network. So they're really trying to beat this into the ground and beat Mula into the ground of being revolutionary before it was socially accepted. So that's all well and good, but it would have been nice if this was a slow burn over 3 or 4 years and slowly seeing people come to the forefront and, you know, having the women kind of having the cream rise to the top naturally instead of just shoving them down your throat saying, look, they're impressive. You have to think they're impressive, even though we write them like high school girls. Go, go, go. Like these people. Go, go, go.
I'm taking a second to compose myself here because I know that I'm going to get upset while I'm saying this, and I don't want to do that. Because this has absolutely nothing at all to do with the fact that we're getting a women's battle royal, because I don't mind that, actually. You can give the same opportunity to the women in the undercard that you give to the men. Give them a chance to have a WrestleMania payday and an opportunity to perform in front of what is traditionally the largest crowd of the year that the WWE has, the WrestleMania crowd. Tony said that he doesn't necessarily buy into the Mula thing. As somebody that's done some research on the topic, I can say that I have, I do, and she's a piece of shit.
Okay.
This is a woman who used to prostitute her girls to the boys in the locker room. This is a woman who used to drug the women that were living at her house to keep them under her control. For the longest time, the WWE wanted no association with the Mula name. Why do you think it was called the Mae Young Classic last year? Because they did not want the name Fabulous Mula attached to it. Then, all of a sudden, it's time to do a battle royal, and wouldn't you know it, Mula's back in WWE terms again. She's back on their good graces. She's back in the public mainstream radar. She's back being involved here. Now, I know it's not her directly, because Ellison is long since gone. I mean, it is what it is there. And not to speak ill of the dead, they can't defend themselves. But I kind of already have, so it is what it is. I have absolutely zero interest in this being named after a woman who did more to set back women's wrestling than to move it forward. You want to name this for somebody that's passed away? That's an influential female in terms of pro wrestling history? Real simple. The Sherry Martel Memorial Battle Royal. The Miss Elizabeth Memorial Battle Royal. Granted, Liz wasn't much of a wrestler, but Liz was the first person to bring women in wrestling to a more mainstream acceptance. Yeah, people knew who Mula was, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they liked her. Everybody loved Liz. Sherry Martel is one of the most underrated women's wrestlers of all time. Able to portray any character given to her within the drop of a hat because she was that damn talented. You can take your Fabulous Mula and you can get her the fuck off my screen because I have zero interest. With that
yeah.
being said, I believe we're done with
this. So what brand soapbox do you prefer, Harry?
Dove, if you must know.
Oh, I'm just checking.
Mm-hmm. I'm a Dove man myself.
Tony knows what's
I'm
up.
I'm an
Irish
spring guy.
I'm allergic to it. Every time I use it, I fucking break out.
That'd be a good reason not to use it.
Exactly. With that being said, let's get into our final reaction for tonight's episode of Raw, shall we?
Sure.
Okay.
All right. Favorite match or moment? I feel like this one's going to be kind of obvious because there wasn't a whole lot great on tonight's show, but there was one thing to me that stood out, and that was the Finn Balor-Seth Rollins match. Tony?
I mean, the announcement of the Fabulous Mula Battle Royale, I mean, you can't really...
I'm going to punch you right in the dick next time I see you.
Oh, that's where I was going to go with it, too. I love Mula.
Finn versus Balor.
Andrew?
Yeah, same thing. It was the only real match on the entire show, so it's kind of hard not to pick it.
Least favorite match or moment? I think I'm going to go with the Roman Reigns opening segment. I didn't buy it. It didn't interest me. Tony?
I'm going to go with Nia's Rampage. I just wish it was done differently. I feel bad because I feel like they were on the verge of something amazing, and now it's just average.
Andrew?
I'm going to go with Cena's promo because it went from jovial and trolly to a retread of what Roman just said an hour beforehand. So if Roman's wasn't that great, then this obviously can't be much better either. And it was not his best work.
I realize I forgot something. I'll address it once we get done with our final reactions because I just thought we forgot one of the segments from tonight's episode. I'll get to it after we finish our final reactions. Overall show rating, Tony?
6. Didn't have much to hold on to.
Andrew?
5.5. Same reasons as Tony. It was just kind of there.
See, this was a middle-of-the-road Raw to me. I gave it a 5. There were no super great matches to sink my teeth into. There were no super great promos for me to sink my teeth into. It was just kind of there the entire time it was on. MVP for tonight. Tony?
I'll give it to...
I'm waiting for one of you guys to say Moolah because I know it's coming.
No, it's only funny one. I'm going to give it to Brock Lesnar for not showing up.
Andrew?
Vince McMahon's tie. It was fucking nice, like really.
I'm going to give it to Shane McMahon for showing up. No, I'm going to give it to Asuka, actually. I think that Asuka, once she's able to actually talk without being interrupted, is a surprisingly good promo for somebody who speaks as little English as she does. And to what Tony said earlier, to be the woman, you have to beat the woman line from Asuka was really nice as well. Okay, so real quick, before we get out of here, I did forget one thing, and I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on it. Ultimate Deletion is next week. Are you surprised that they're doing this on Raw and not saving it for WrestleMania, Tony?
We cared so little about this segment that we almost forgot it on the show.
That's fair.
I guess that answers you right there.
It does. Is there anything you're expecting out of this next week?
No.
I'm expecting Thanks. Bottle rockets.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm curious as to whether or not they're going to do this TNA style. I mean, we had a lot of the mentions of the TNA stuff in tonight's hype package for it. They mentioned Senor Benjamin. They mentioned Vanguard 1. They mentioned the Lake of Reincarnation. They show Matt Hardy dragging Skarsgård, the dilapidated boat.
Well, yeah, the Hardys own all that now. But Borash is there, so Borash was pivotal in the Broken universe, so I think it'll be more TNA style.
I will be curious to see how it's presented with a bigger budget, too, though, because obviously the budget that the WWE has to put something like this on dwarfs anything that TNA would be able to.
I think if they make it too pretty, that'll ruin it, though, because the campy aspect of it kind of gave it a nice... allure.
100% well, agreed.
It caused Jeff Hardy to drink and drive, so I don't know, man.
Then what's the Usos' excuse?
They were raised in a penitentiary, okay?
Oh, Rikishi got them to jail and raised them there?
Yeah.
They got homesick.
And here I thought you were going to blame it on Scotty Too Hotty or Grandmaster Sexay.
I mean, Grandmaster Sexay would not be wrong. Just throwing that out there into the universe.
I'm not disagreeing with that.
For the third man, Andrew Ballas, the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero, I'm Harry Broadhurst, thanking you for listening to this episode of The Raw Reaction here on the Chair Shot Radio Network. Tony, send us home.
Hey, Harry, we're kind of like too cool.
Just end on that. Just end on
deuces, bitch.
This has been The Raw Reaction here on the Chair Shot Radio Network. Join us again next week when Harry Broadhurst present the next episode of Monday Night Raw on the road to WrestleMania. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next Monday night, assuming we don't get fired in the downtime. Bye, everyone.